This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's discuss draining the swamp, the surgery we're in now. We have reporting on the resistance from inside the government. Sean Spicer joins us. Chip Roy joins us. All that coming up on I'm Right. I thought it would be helpful to talk about where we're at as a country really quickly here. Because, look, we're 2 months into the Trump presidency. Things are going very well. The country is very happy with it. Trump himself posted on social media today 57% approval. That's really high for a modern-day president. The country's happy. You're happy. I'm happy. I thought it would be helpful, though, to discuss what we have ahead of us here. Because things are going well. But what does that mean? Well, here's what it means. The United States of America is now, still, currently, and has been very, 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 very sick. We'll go ahead and call it cancer for the purpose of our analogy here tonight. And look, I just lost another family member to cancer. I'm well aware of what that word means to people, so I'll be as delicate as I can, but I don't know that there's a better way to describe where we are as a country. We have developed cancer. And I say developed, that's really putting it nicely. People with names and addresses have given this country cancer on purpose. Communism, Marxism. It has infected this country. And it's not, we didn't catch it early. I'll put it to you that way. Year after year after year, decade after decade, the cancerous tumor of Marxism has been growing inside the body of the United States of America. And for our purposes, we'll make this a little bit more narrow tonight. It's been growing inside the United States government, inside our political body, inside the bureaucracy. Year after year after year, through focused effort on their part and negligence on our part, they have been hiring as many committed communists to occupy the government as humanly possible. As fast as they could possibly bring them in the door, they brought them in the door. And remember, this was a focused effort by the American Democrat, by the American communists. Remember, we would get stories really towards the end of the Biden presidency, about the last year, these really ramped up where you'd wake up and you'd see another massive crop of federal employees were just hired. The Biden administration just grabbing people from the private sector and hoovering them up into the federal government as fast as they could, almost like they had a purpose. 87,000 new IRS agents, they made sure that was part of their signature bill. Get them in, more, more, more. Why? Why? Well, what is the communist? He is a revolutionary. He is a religious zealot and a revolutionary. And wherever you put him, you could put him as head of the Cub Scouts, you could put him coaching a little league team, your child social studies teacher, or you could put him in the IRS, the FBI. He's going to evangelize on behalf of communism, and he will do so in a committed fashion. And the American Democrat knows that. Year after year after year, decade after decade, these people have wormed their way into the federal government. And where we are now as a country, Trump or no Trump, is we are very, very, very sick. And the reason I chose to use cancer is a tough nut to crack. It's very difficult, and I'm certainly not the cancer expert. I just have multiple loved ones I've lost to that terrible, terrible disease. It's just very difficult to kill it without killing the person you're trying to help. You know this, and we'll talk about chemotherapy, but it could apply to really so many forms of cancer. You have this malignant group of cells that's growing inside the body. That's American Marxism. And it's growing and it's growing and it's growing. It's growing inside of our government. As we speak, it's growing. And you have to not only stop the growth, you must remove it. You must remove the cancer. But it's not just remove some of it. The thing is about cancer, you have to get it all. You have to get every part of it, even if you leave just one little speck of it left in there. Well, that part's just going to start growing and growing. You're going to have the same problem again. You must get it all. But, well, that's the other challenge, right? You have to get it all, but there's good stuff around it. There are essential things around it. How do you make sure you get it all that cancer? while not cutting around so much stuff that you kill the person you're trying to save. Which brings us to what the Trump administration is doing now and where we are. We are not saved. We are not on the road to recovery. The election of Donald Trump, bringing in people like Elon Musk and others, what it did was it got us an appointment with the doctor, and we are currently under the knife on the operating table. And that's what really draining the swamp is.
And any federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp. It's very simple. And the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over.
I love that. I cheered. Hopefully you cheered. Clapped, at least on the inside when he said it. I love it. He said it many times. Drain the swamp. We're not going to be run by these dirty communist bureaucrats anymore. Yes, yes, yes. That sounds good. We know the IRS is reportedly cutting 50% of its workforce. DOD, 5%, 8%, depending on who you talk to. You wake up every single day, you pick up your phone and you look, and they're cutting these people, they're cutting those people, cuts here, cuts there. And Central Intelligence Agency is not exempt from this. They're reportedly pulling people off site. Hey, give me your security badge. Starbucks is on me. By the way, you're out of a job. So all these things are good. I want you to celebrate them. I'm celebrating them. Elon came out and said it might be the first time this kind of thing's actually working.
I mean, the reality is that very little power relative to the bureaucracy until Doge. So Doge is a threat to the bureaucracy. It's the first threat to the bureaucracy. Normally the bureaucracy eats revolutions for breakfast. This is the first time that they're not. That the revolution might actually succeed. That we could restore power to the people instead of power to the bureaucracy.
So good things are happening. And they are afraid. And we are under the knife. And as of right now, surgery is going well. My point for this talk tonight is just so we all understand that this is going to be painful, even if the surgery, and I hope it is, even if it's a huge success, if they get every single bit of the cancer out, even a perfect surgery at this point in time is still going to involve pain, a recovery period. You can't, as a country, allow yourself to get this sick for this long and then come out of it without pain. We want a quick fix. We want this or that. If you ever read, or maybe you have any complaints about the Trump administration so far, why haven't they done this yet? Why haven't they done that yet? I get that. Totally fair to criticize your government as well. Not complaining about you at all. But this kind of surgery, this much recovery, is going to be painful because we are, not we were, we are very, very, very sick. You remember the report about ICE. Now, this is really one of those things when you take a moment and you really just take in the whole story, it's even more amazing. You remember the story came out that ICE was still conducting raids. But what was their policy? You've heard Tom Holman talk about it. We've talked about it a million times on the show. They're going after the worst first. The worst first. The worst first. That was their priority. Public safety threats first. You've heard that. What does that mean? Well, remember, foreign countries under Democrats emptied their prisons and mental institutions into our country. It's not just that we have people from Venezuela here. We have the worst scumbags in Venezuela here, sent here by Venezuela, and accepted here, oftentimes flown here by American Democrats. That's what happens when you vote Democrat. We're talking people convicted of child rape, serial murderers. ICE is out there hunting these people down first. Hey, let's get these people first. And remember, we woke up and there was a story one day that someone inside the government had given the child rapists a heads up that ICE was coming so they couldn't be arrested. Kristi Noem, to her credit, came out because I was calling for it. I didn't want to hear about firings. I wanted to hear about prison. Here's what she said.
There's leakers all over throughout this government. I think that everybody needs to be. I think these in DHS specifically, these two were leaking our enforcement operations that we had planned and were going to conduct in several cities and expose law enforcement to vulnerabilities, to those ops being jeopardized, to where their lives would be in danger. So they will be prosecuted and they could face up to 10 years in federal prison because they did that.
And they better. And they better, because the system is digging in. The system is fighting a revolution. As I said, we currently have cancer of the terminal variety. We are in emergency surgery, and it must be successful. They will fight. Why do you think we still don't have that Epstein list? Look, maybe you can yell and scream all you want. Maybe you're right. Maybe Pam Bondi is a disappointment, as I told you she very well might be initially. Maybe our evil system we have, maybe the system is in there protecting the billionaire politician pedophiles on that list. Did you see what came out? This is from Center for Renewing America. You know, we talk a lot about DEI stuff, DEI this, DEI that. Do you know how much of your money has been used to spend on the cultural Marxist destruction of your country? $1 trillion. Political ideology aside, how many people will do very bad things to protect $1 trillion business of theirs where they get to make money on DEI? We are not done with surgery. We are not cured, not by a long shot. We are in the middle of it. And what we are going to go through in this next 4 years, as the Trump administration focuses on this stuff, is going to be painful. And there are going to be ops and propaganda pieces against it. You're going to see media story after media story of them trying to defend the $1 trillion scam they've maintained forever. The cancer wants to remain. We have to gird our loins and be ready for what is going to be a very long surgery, and even if it's successful, a very long recovery. That's what happens when your country is neglected for as long as it has been. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. The great Luke Rozaiak joins us. He has some reporting on just how deep the corruption goes in just a moment. Before we get to Luke, let's talk about the rot, and as it pertains to the corporate system. We've been talking about the bureaucracy, the government, the corporate system is just as evil, and you could argue has done just as much damage. What was your cell phone company doing during COVID? What was your cell phone company doing after St. George Floyd died? Were they writing checks with your money to Black Lives Matter? I haven't forgotten and I haven't forgiven. My cell phone company wasn't doing any of those things. Pure Talk, all they do is patriotism. That and give you the same great 5G network for like half of what you're currently paying. You want your cell phone bill cut in half while you support a company that actually hires Americans, is pro-America, and will never use your money against America? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
We believe that whether you are a doctor, an accountant, a lawyer, or an air traffic controller, you should be hired and promoted based on skill and competence, not race or gender. You should be hired based on merit.
It's a no-brainer, right? Probably why that speech received like a 76% approval rating from the American public. Hire based on merit. It's one of those things that gets most people nodding their head. Yeah, they are. They should. So why is that not a thing in the federal government, where it should probably, you know, be mostly a thing there? Joining me now, Luke Rozaiak, investigative reporter with the Daily Wire, has a wonderful, fascinating piece out on why this doesn't happen with the feds. Hey, Luke, I'll let you filibuster. The floor is yours. Why doesn't the federal government, why hasn't it been hiring on merit?
It's really amazing, Jesse. Back in the 1970s, there were some minorities who didn't get hired for federal jobs, and so they sued. And what they were alleging is, at the time, the government had it sort of down to a science, how to identify out of the thousands or millions of people applying for federal jobs. How do you rank them? How do you sort through all those resumes and get the best of the best? Well, they had this exam called the Professional Administrative Career Examination. And it was kind of like the SAT for applying to work for the federal government. It could figure out how smart you were, how good you were going to be at your job. And it was very accurate. They did all these studies that it turned out to very accurately predict who was going to go on to be a good employee. But it turned out that there was some racial impacts to that. It wasn't the exact same racial breakdown of blacks, whites, and Hispanics as you would get if you just hired in essentially a random lottery. And so there were some minorities who sued, and the Jimmy Carter was president at the time. Even he said, now, well, we need to be able to hire the best. I mean, this makes sense to figure out whether you can do the job before we hire. But eventually they kind of bullied him. And after he lost election, he sort of just kind of threw in the towel and agreed to settle with this group of plaintiffs. So this is back in 1981, and it was supposed to be this five-year sort of court order where these plaintiffs could, basically the government agreed to stop using this exam, and the plaintiffs were supposed to choose. They had veto power over the new examination. So here's the problem, Jesse. They weren't able to figure out any exam that did not have racial impact. The Office of Personnel Management developed six different tests to figure out who the best employees were. But the better, the more accurately it predicted what a good employee you were going to be, the more it had disparate impact on minority groups. And so they just weren't able to find a test that hired competent employees and resulted in a federal workforce that exactly mirrored the population as a whole. And so the only way, the only test they could figure out that got the racial results they were looking for was a self-assessment. And so this is where we are right now for decades. This is how you come to get a federal job, is you tell you fill out a multiple choice exam where the more you brag and boast, the more you get the job. And so basically we now screen federal employees for arrogance instead of competence. And that's resulted in the racial makeup that they were looking for.
What? So I just want to make sure I'm clear about this, because I've never applied for a federal position. So the application for a federal job just involves telling the federal government that you're really great? Do I have that right?
That's right. So instead of saying, like, here are a bunch of math questions to figure out whether you're good at math, they ask you, how great are you at math? And if you're like, man, I'm the best at math, nobody's better at math than me, then you get hired. And so this has been the only exam they found that has been able to get them the requisite number of blacks and Hispanics. And so for 40 years, we've had this random DC court settlement. And again, it was only supposed to last 5 years, but they couldn't find any normal test that would do what they were looking for. So we've had total DEI hiring across all federal agencies for almost half a century. And it literally explicitly, Jimmy Carter was just like, yeah, we can't hire for competence because then we won't be able to hire any black people. Like, it sounds racist when you say what Jimmy Carter's position was. But that's how the federal government has been operating. And so Trump is challenging this in court. He's got his U.S. attorney in D.C. making a very strong argument that this should have never been in place, and especially after recent Supreme Court rulings on affirmative action. There's no way that this is justified, not to mention the fact that there is no underrepresentation of blacks in the federal workforce. They're actually 50% overrepresented. So I don't know why this DEI scheme would even be justified, to say nothing of the fact that this is supposed to be a short-term thing that, like all affirmative action programs, just somehow goes on forever anyway.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Look, before, great reporting, by the way. Before I let you go, I have to ask. So Trump's challenging this in court. We're looking at all these different cuts. Marco Rubio comes out, says all these USA contracts are being stopped. 50% of IRS agents are going to be let go. My question is, how permanent are these things, Luke? Or the next time we get some worthless old commie like Biden, are they just going to go in and reimplement all these things?
Well, I mean, I guess that's where Congress has got to do its job. You know, we got to see about this CR where DOGE is making all these budget cuts. I mean, we really need to see that reflected in Congress giving less money to these agencies. And even when it comes to laying off employees, they have all these kind of appeal rights, Merit Systems Protection Board, and so on. And one of the best ways to ensure that we can fire these people, that the DOGE layoffs actually stick, is cutting the agency's budget, because that's a great justification where you have to tell a judge, look, of course we had to lay them off. We don't have the money. So it really, it comes down to Congress.
He is Luke Rozsiak, Daily Wire. Go read all of his stuff. You want to be on in the know, if you will, as we say. Luke, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. All right. Speaking of Congress budget, what's in it, what's not, what's going to pass. There's two different things. There's a CR. Let's talk to Chip Roy and really suss all this out of what's what and who's who before we get to Chip Roy. Let's talk about your watch. You know what? Let's talk about your next gift. The one to yourself or to maybe your father, brother, son. Something special about giving or getting a watch. Especially when it's a Wasson watch and you're giving a watch that's not only high quality. You're giving a watch that shares and promotes your values. When I got my Wasson watch, one, I got this sweet leather roll-up carrying case with it, different options for the band on it. Mine had a Bible verse in it. Did you get a Bible verse with the last watch you purchased? Wasson watch shares and promotes our values. Run by a United States Marine. Best watches, and you're supporting a company who supports you. 10% off a Wasson watch with the promo code Jesse. WassonWatch.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Is there going to be a government shutdown at the end of this week?
Could happen. I mean, the Democrats want that. They want to destroy the country. So I can't tell you, but it could happen. It shouldn't have happened, and it probably won't. I think the CR is going to get passed. We'll see, but it could happen. You never know.
Another day, another threat of a government shutdown, always hanging over our heads. I guess we'll get an update from Chip on whether we should be cheering for one or not. Joining me now, Congressman Chip Roy, great one from the state of Texas. Okay, Chip, I'm so confused. There's a big, beautiful bill. There's a CR. They're separate things, but everything seems to be linked right now. Tell us what's going on. I'm too stupid.
Hardly. You're the smart one. You're not in Congress, nor are you in D.C. That makes you the smart one. Look, here's... Yeah, there's no excuse for me. That's all I can say. So here's the deal. I'm going to put it in basic terms. You have your spending bills, right, which is the discretionary spending for the alphabet soup of all the agencies and crap and defense. That's roughly about $1.7 or $8 trillion a year, give or take. Then you've got overall mandatory spending, right? You've got all your Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, interest, all of that stuff, that most of which is on autopilot. So we have two big debates going on right now. First and most pressing right now this week is whether or not and how we're going to deal with the government funding that expires on Friday or the discretionary piece, because we're operating under the three-month CR that was passed right before Christmas. So now that debate is unfolding. On that point, I support what the president wants to do with a six-month freeze in spending at the current spending levels using a very pretty tight, clean CR. It's got some anomalies in there, which are kind of budgetary geek speak for trying to level out the facts that certain contracts expire and laws change. So you have to kind of manipulate it a little bit. But basically, you're spending the same level as we spent last year. It's a freeze. No earmarks, no big omnibus bill. We have 72 hours to read the bill. We're doing that right now. We got it on Saturday. There's generally fairly wide support. And the most important point is to give the president and Elon more time to use DOGE and Russ vote over the Office of Management and Budget, time to figure out how they can do impoundment and rescissions to keep cutting what they're cutting. So for example, Marco Rubio yesterday announced that 83% of the contracts operating under USAID are now canceled. So that's why when you hear a conservative go, why am I gonna vote to fund USAID? Well, you're not really with this guy in the White House. You're not really with Marco at state because they're making changes. So for us, the smart play tactically is don't empower Democrats to try to shut the government down and shut Elon down. Just pass the CR that we have designed to be very limited and give us six more months to get Elon and those guys up to speed. The second part is the reconciliation part, which is where we touch mandatory. I can go down that road if you want, but I've been filibustering.
No, I would rather, actually, that was a wonderful layout. So what we're dealing with right now is the CR for the discretionary things, the basic things. Yep. Now, Now for the ugly part, the untouchables and all that other stuff. Please, take it away.
So if we get this CR done this week, some conservatives have been raising concerns because they don't want to fund USAID or Planned Parenthood, but I think we'll get there. If we get that done, all right, then government is funded through September at frozen levels, discretionary, eat hex, that's got defense money. All right, let's go. Then we've got to deal with what's called reconciliation, the purpose of which is to try to balance everything out and to say, hey, we're not going to have more deficit spending, right? It's to make it the math work, which we usually fail at. The goal here is to say we want to extend Trump's tax cuts so that we can get economic growth going while they're deregulating and doing all that great stuff. More money in Americans' pockets. Don't let a tax increase happen. But also, this is the important part, have spending cuts. When we passed the budget on the House side, Jody Arrington, fellow Texan, he and I worked hard on the budget committee along with our colleagues to come up with a plan that would find $2 trillion in savings out of reforms heavily to Medicaid, food stamps, the student loan program, other stuff that we thought was filled with waste, fraud, and abuse. That's where we think we're going to have the biggest fight coming up. Will our blue state moderates say, we can't touch Medicaid reform, even though, by the way, it's still going up under our budget. This is just the DC swamp crap where it's a reduction in the increase. In other words, it's not really my preference. It's not really good enough for me. However, it was good enough because it was historic for us to have $2 trillion in reductions to mandatory spending, which are desperately needed. One last point to put it all in context. If you go back to pre-COVID spending, we were spending about $4.5 trillion total for government. Today, we're spending $7 trillion, Jesse. We ought to easily be able to cut that. But to be clear, President Trump has taken Medicare off the table. Legally, we can't touch Social Security under law and reconciliation. All that leaves, and you can't do anything about interest except shrink spending. So all that leaves is Medicaid, food stamps, some of those issues. So that's why we're focused so intently on that reform, because Medicaid is often being used to scam. California gets a whole bunch of federal money and they give it to illegal aliens and the able-bodied instead of the most vulnerable. So for me, let's just save that scam. Let's not give the money to the able-bodied. Let's give it to the vulnerable and let's do our job. That was a lot.
Okay, Chip, No, it wasn't. Thank you for that. Was such a wonderful, simple breakdown. Everyone comes on and uses all these friggin' words. You're the only one who breaks it down in such a simple fashion. So explain this to me so I can understand. It was $4 trillion. Now it's $7 trillion. We're dealing with $2 trillion in Medicaid cuts over a significant period of time. I believe I got you correct on all that. So how did we get such an increase in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security during COVID? I understand the spending increase during COVID with the idiotic this bill and that bill, and I get all that. But the non-discretionary spending jacked up during COVID too? How did that happen?
So the jump from four and a half trillion in total spending right before COVID, yeah, say 2019, to $7 trillion now. That $2.5 trillion jump. I'm still getting the full accounting of that now that we've got people in the administration helping us. But in broad terms, it boils down to inflation was a big chunk of it, right? So you have massively increasing inflation. But you also had a massive expansion in Medicaid, okay? Let me give you an example for just the Medicaid piece. If you look at the fiscal year 21 budget, the Congressional Budget Office, their baseline, that is what they project out over time for Medicaid, was over a trillion dollars less than our current baseline. So in 4 years, the overall projection for the cost of Medicaid is a whole other $1 trillion more than it was in 21 when Trump left office. So what happened was Democrats used COVID, jammed a whole bunch of money into the system, a whole bunch went to the states, the states got flush with cash, the states then spent that for a lot of their preferred projects. And then states like California used that to game the system to then pump all this money to fund illegals, to fund the able-bodied, and expand Medicaid because they want everybody on the hook. They want everybody in socialized medicine. So they blew out all of that. That was a huge chunk of it. There are other things. There was expansions of food stamps, like $300 billion. There was funding on the student loan programs. All of these are things we're trying to cut back, and they had their massive regulations on energy and the subsidies that were going out to all the companies for the solar panels and wind farms. All of that added up to that bloat. That's why we're fighting to cut that in reconciliation.
Golly. Okay, final one on all this stuff, and I'll let you go. Thank you for your time today, Chip. The defense stuff, we keep getting told, at least border defense I'm talking about, that everything we need, everything Trump needs, everything he's requesting is in these bills. Well, for the most part, everything to get the border secure. So I guess I'll just go ahead and go with that. My question is, you know, Trump was well on his way to securing the border, or pretty much had after the end of last time, and the Biden administration went in and promptly started suing so they didn't have to secure the border. If, God forbid, we get another Democrat president in 2028, aren't they just going to stop it, whether it's the law or not the law?
Well, that's when you have an administration that didn't care about the rule of law, as was the Biden administration, then that is a clear concern. It is why we need to go beyond what President Trump is currently doing, which is awesome, what Tom Homan is doing, which is awesome, which is to apply the law, stop the flow, put pressure on Mexico, build walls, apply, you know, Title 42 policies, remain in Mexico, all of the stuff they're doing. Suddenly the apprehensions are dropped down to 6,000 a month instead of over 6,000 a day. It's not rocket science. But here's the problem. In the first part of the Trump administration, remember all the unaccompanied kids? Remember how they were doing that, and they got in Jeff Sessions and all the crap that happened with the kids, the families? Well, we're going to have to pass laws so that we can't allow Democrats to abuse those policies, or even allow cartels and NGOs to abuse those policies. Tighten asylum, tighten parole, tighten how the unaccompanied children are treated. We've got to be more forceful on that. That was what we put in HR 2. Remember our bill last Congress? Not the current HR 2, but last Congress's HR 2. That was our good border bill. We need to pass that. But we're going to have seven Democrats in the Senate we're going to have to get through and use leverage to try to do it if we want permanent change.
Congressman, as always, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right. Sean Spicer joins us in a few. Before we get to Sean, you know how long I slept last night? I'm not making this up. You're going to think I'm lazy. It's 8:30 or so. I just got kind of tired, and I knew I had a big week this week. So I decided I was going to make myself a cup of hot chocolate. And I put Dream Powder from Beam in it. That's what it is. Mine's cinnamon chocolate. And I just, about 8:30 last night, I sip on this cup of hot chocolate. I went in and I went to sleep. You know when I woke up this morning? 9 o'clock. 12 hours of sleep. And I woke up feeling so freaking good. That's what happens when you have Dream Powder from Beam. You just sleep like a rock. I don't remember the last time I slept that long. Gosh, I slept so freaking good. I feel amazing. Want to experience that? Up to 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. How much time do we have? We win an election, and presidential administration is 4 years long in this country, and we think to ourselves, nice, things are going well, things are going really well, but we don't have that much time. We don't even have 4 years. We don't even have 3.5 years, because the midterms cometh. Now, where is the big signature Trump bill? Joining me now, Sean Spicer, host of the Sean Spicer Show, who has been all over this very thing. Sean, the clock is ticking, isn't it, my friend?
It is ticking. And I think what one president taketh, one can take away. We saw that after the first Trump administration, Joe Biden undoing all of these great things, and then President Trump undoing all the Biden's things and getting things done on a front. And so my point is, look, we have a Republican Congress. We have a Republican Senate. We have President Trump. Lock it in. Get this done. On things like immigration, we have talked for decades about what we would do to fix all this stuff. Don't leave it open to another potential president undoing right now. We've seen what can happen. And part of the reason that the courts are looking at stopping some of his DOGE efforts is because of the law. So what we need to do is on things like immigration, codify this thing in law. Make sure that a future Democratic president can't undo things. And that's the point, Jesse, is that, like, I don't want to look back in 2 years and say, you know, hey, look at this House majority is 2 seats, 3 seats, depending on what day of the week it is. I don't want to look back and say, I wish we had done X, because right now we don't need them. We don't need to deal with them. We can do some of this through reconciliation. We've talked about visas, ICE agents, administration judges for, administrative judges. Like, let's not regret looking back in 18 months and saying, I wish we had locked in a few of those wins.
Okay, well, Sean, then what's the holdup? And I understand D.C. never moves as fast as you or I would like it to move, or anyone watching. I get that. We don't live in a system with a king where he can just have things passed by decree. But what is the holdup, Sean? It has been a couple months now. Supposedly Mike Johnson's on board and John Thune's on board. What's the holdup?
Well, so there's two issues. There's the big, beautiful bill that we keep talking about, and then there's locking in some other wins. And the problem is, there is an element of, like, look, when you talk about locking in all these tax cuts from 2017 that are going to expire, adding no tax on tips, adding no tax on Social Security, energy, border, immigration, there is an element of time that takes that, and what I mean by that is, in order to, quote, pay for the tax cuts through this process that we call reconciliation, you have to have certain offsets. And so that means that they tell other committees, go find these savings, lock in some of the things that DOGE has done and others. So, you know, somebody came to you and said, hey, I need you to save, $20 billion. Maybe you could do it in a couple days or a couple weeks, but you're asking a bunch of committees to go find stuff in their jurisdiction. I will give them this. It's moving faster than I actually thought. But it's also beyond this, Jesse. We're talking about the reconciliation bill, but there's also other stuff that doesn't fit in the reconciliation. It's a very wonky thing, this whole reconciliation bill, about what's allowed in and what's allowed out, because it only takes 50 votes in the Senate. So I'm actually talking, also going beyond this and saying, there's stuff that can't fit in the reconciliation bill because of the nature of the parliamentary nature of what this is, which is all inside the baseball crap. But the reality is that if we don't lock in some of this immigration reform that we've been talking about, then we're in the future going to have to be negotiating with Democrats about how many Dreamers do we give citizenship to, and how many people do we allow to stay in this country that came in illegally. We need to lock in everything before any potential loss of a majority.
Ugh, Dreamers. Barf. All right. So, Sean, let's assume, and I think historically, politically, we can assume this safely, that this is really a one shot. Really, presidents get about one. You know, Joe Biden got the IRA. Barack Obama got Obamacare. This is going to be a one shot. Is this enough to move the Trump agenda forward for 4 years? Okay, so it's not.
No. Okay, will it be signature? Sure, this is massive. But I also think that that's sort of like, an athlete saying, I got one home run. Like, now am I done for the season? I think the way that President Trump is going, like you said this right at the forefront of this, time is ticking. Let's do it. Let's just get as much done as possible. So will this big, beautiful bill be awesome? Yeah, I'm excited about it. But it's like, you cannot, then the clock keeps going. And and it's not just 4 years. I mean, look, when you have a razor thin majority, and I don't mean to be, doomsday here, but who knows? Somebody could, resign for a variety of health or personal reasons, whatever. I don't want to put it to chance. Get something else queued up on immigration so that we're ready to go. Because, as I said, because of this parliamentary gobbledygook, there's only so much that you can actually do legislatively in that bill. So if you want visa reform, if you want to talk about the immigration courts and what the reform is, or how many people we let, or getting back to a merit-based system, then we need to do that legislatively outside of reconciliation.
Sean, I'm going to play you this clip from Joe Walsh because it really begs an important question about the midterms. Here he was.
I couldn't help but notice your head nodding there throughout that. I'm just going to let you address those scenarios from the $250 bill to Mount Rushmore to, a third Trump term.
It's too easy to have fun with this. But, Michael, this is scary. Trump's what, 78, 79 years old? I have no doubt that if Trump could, he would try to run again. I think, Michael, the biggest failure of all of us during this Trump era has been the failure of imagination. Mm-hmm. We have not imagined how bad and how low he'd go. He tried to overthrow an American election 4 years ago. I have no doubt that he could try to stop the midterm elections. If he's physically able, he may try to run again in 28. This is really scary.
Okay, Sean, I look at the Democrat Party's approval numbers and they're amazingly bad. Yeah, I know. Look at these freaks. Their approval numbers are in the toilet. Trump just put out something this morning. His are at 57%. It's very, very freaking good for a modern-day president. Yeah. So explain to me, like I'm a moron, why I should be worried about the midterms at all.
Well, first of all, the idea that Joe Walsh, the former congressman from Illinois, who was basically kicked out of the Republican Party and the Democrats and the left called him, I forgot if his sin was racism or just nuttiness. Now he's welcomed back in because he hates Trump. It just tells you everything you need to know about the Democratic Party. And then, by the way, at least he's on television talking because most of these Democrats are doing TikTok dances as their form of opposition. But the reason I care is because when you have a thin majority, like I said, today it's one seat or two seats. We'll have two special elections in Florida in the next couple of weeks. That'll get us back to four. Then Elise Stefanik steps down. That'll get us back down to three. Then there'll be her special. When anything's that close, there's a margin for error. So that's why I care. I'm a nervous guy, Jesse. I don't know, but I don't have, you know, the thick skin that you have. I get nervous. Until you can give me a 20-seat majority or a 50-seat majority, I get nervous. And what I don't want is to wake up and say, well, I wish we had done X. And I saw the reason that I'm nervous is that last time when Trump was in office, he lost the House majority. And what did they do? Impeachment, 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 hearing after hearing after hearing. They're not looking to work with him. They're not looking to get an agenda passed. They're looking to wreak havoc. And my point is that, and the other thing is, just bottom line, is that if you actually care about the midterms, then put points on the board, get things done for the American people, cut their taxes, secure the border, make us energy independent, because people will reward the politicians that are on the right side of issues. So my point is, get stuff done, put points on the board, solve America's problems, get reelected. But until and when that happens and we can see them, I get nervous and say, why would you put off? You know, it's like my mom always used to tell me, why put off today, tomorrow, what you can do today? And so I'm like, guys, the more you do on the agenda, the more likely you are to get reelected, because the American people will reward you.
Sean, what's the Naval Academy Board of Visitors, and why in the world would they welcome somebody like you?
Yeah. God, you must be watching local news. So the Naval Academy Board is like any other board of directors, or every college has one. And so the president, the House Speaker, and a couple other people can appoint members to the Board of Visitors to the Naval Academy. I served on this during Trump's first term, and then Joe Biden fired myself, Ronnie Jackson, and everybody for the first time in history. And I sued the case called Spicer v. Biden. And the court affirmed that the president has the absolute authority to fire anyone he wants. So what President Trump did when he got back in office, he fired them all. And he was kind enough and honored me by reappointing me to the Naval Academy Board on Friday night, along with Ronnie Jackson, one of his longtime aides, Walt Nauta, and a badass Navy SEAL named Derek Van Orden, who represents Wisconsin in the House of Representatives. So I figured a Marine like you would know, but you never cease to amaze me, you guys. You know, you just sort of say, where am I going? Who do I shoot at?
Derek is good people. Sean, more importantly, I have never actually set foot on the hallowed grounds of Annapolis. Most definitely, I could never have gotten into that place. Not that I have any interest in seeing any of you sailors, but there are some young aspiring Marines on that campus. Can you hook me up with some tickets or something? Can I go to something over there?
I think we'll make room for you. I think we can do that. They do allow the option for those kids to go Marine.
Sean, congratulations. Oh, before I let you go real quick, did Joe Biden screw up with his tyrannical control of things like the Kennedy Center?
Well, that's why I mentioned this. This is so funny that when I filed the lawsuit, the media kept saying, you lost. And I said, did I? because the whole goal, my term was over in 49 days when he fired me and Ronnie Jackson and H.R. McMaster from the West Point board. The goal was we made them go to court. And then so when President Trump fired everybody on all these commissions, including the Kennedy Center, all these guys said we can't fight back because of Spicer v. Biden. It gave President Trump the authority, not that he probably would have cared anyway, but at least he had the court authority to fire everybody. So it's pretty cool to be small part of history.
That's friggin' cool. Spicer versus Biden. Sean, my brother, appreciate you. See you soon. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And I thought, you know, we're not in Congress. I'm not in there. You're not in there. I'm not walking those halls. And there's something we miss when we look at things on the television or social media. We miss the smell. George Santos was asked, have you ever wondered who smells the worst? Someone asked George Santos who it is. Here it was.
I can say this with no mental reservation.
Sure.
The worst body odor in Congress is definitely Jerry Nadler. And Jerry Nadler would waddle down that aisle and crop dust it. Like it was every step of his waddle was a fart. But dude, the dude just stinks.
That doesn't sound like Jerry Nadler. You mean to tell me the Jerry Nadler who pooped his pants on TV, he smells?
Work on this subject, not part of this package, but part of preserving our democracy. With that, I'm pleased to yield to the distinguished chair.
I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.